And what's going on in Weslaco, Texas? Recent UFOs. Up next, Linda Moulton Howe, as she studies this situation on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, here we are back with Linda Moulton Howe. It's still another incredible story. Linda, tell us about this, and how did you discover this one?
Well, there was a photo. It wasn't on the web in very good shape. It was almost blasted out light, but it really intrigued me because it was vertical, and it had what appeared to be three reflecting parts, and I really wanted to see what it would look like in a good photograph, and in fact, I'm looking at a good photograph of that frame right now at earthfiles.com. I hope you and all of the listeners will go to Strange Aerial Lights and Triangle over Weslaco, Texas, because I've got a series of photos that came from the young college student who took these. And it is a very recent event. We're going to go back to February 28th. And in this area of Weslaco, I'll just set the geography a little bit. Over, I'd say, at least four decades, there's been a lot of high strangeness in the Brownsville and the Harlingen region of the kind of the southernmost Texas border near the Gulf of Mexico. And if you go about 60 miles west of Brownsville and the Gulf of Mexico, you come to this place called Weslaco. It's a city of about 27,000 people in Hidalgo County, Texas. And the city got its name from an acronym from the old W.E. Stewart Land Company. And this place has had its share of high strangeness as well. And on February 28th, starting around 9 o'clock, this college student, Jose E. Gonzalez, he arrives late from school to come home to his mother's house to get some food and go to sleep, and he has tests the next day. And as he drove up, Jose was surprised to see his mom and his 14-year-old brother, Abrin, coming out of the house looking up into the sky. And Jose could see them pointing at a very large light about halfway between the horizon and the zenith, and it seemed to be maybe about a mile north of their house, and it was shining much more brightly than the surrounding stars. And Jose told me, quote, "We could see sparkling blue, red, orange, I mean really weird different colors, and we all thought it could not possibly be a star. It was too big to be a star. And it kind of moved a little bit. My mom has good eyes, and she could see it move and change colors," close quote. Well, Abrin, the brother, ran in the house to get Jose's Fuji digital camera and zoomed at the light as far as he could go and started snapping photos. Eventually, Jose asked to check the photos his brother was taking and saw that they were blurry because Abrin was inexperienced with that camera. So Jose took over to photograph on frame 2666 that I think is extraordinary. And looking through the lens, Jose could see three navy blue spheres. That's the color he picked that he saw also with his own eyes and is very clear in this photo. And that these spheres were stacked one on top of the other. And if you go to Earth Files, you can see all of these photos that he sent me that he took trying to capture this over a period of about 90 minutes. And here now to talk about how it, what they were seeing sort of from the beginning of this extraordinary series of events that unfolded over the next 4 days and even into the next month is Jose Gonzalez.
It was like light, and you could see like it was sparkling blue, red, orange, really different weird colors. And we all thought it couldn't possibly be a star. I mean, it was too big to be a star, and it kind of moved a little bit. So my little brother, he had to get my camera, and he zoomed in on it. And I could see, like, three balls, and it had, like, a yellowish hue in the middle. First, it looked like one, pretty early, around nine. We could see there was just one ball, but faintly, you could see there was two behind it, and it looks like there's some balls coming out of it. And then in another picture, it looks like they're separating. And then by around 9:40, 10, there's already three of them, three in a formation.
So the first photograph, you could see something that seemed spherical.
Mm-hmm.
And then by at least 40 minutes later, that sphere in the photographs, there are now three?
Yeah.
And the color of each sphere is what?
I could see them as blue. It's pretty early. They're not separated yet, but you could see they're separating.
And after they're separated, are they still blue?
No. They're almost grayish, kind of, but you could see that they have texture, like you could touch them.
Now, the very last frame that you sent me, 2755, and I'm assuming that maybe 2 hours have elapsed?
About an hour and a half.
Okay.
I thought it was leaving because it was getting dimmer. It was going to take off or whatever it was.
What happened?
Around 12 in the morning. After that, we had school and go to sleep. But around 2 a.m., I get up. I just got curious to see if it's still there.
Right.
I look outside, and it's still in the same position, except this time. It looked like sparks, two or three of them, down onto Weslaco.
What color were those sparks?
Grayish, really bright gray.
What was the color of the object that threw the sparks down?
Blue.
So it was back to that blue?
Yeah, it stayed in that position the whole night.
What happened?
It just disappeared.
But how?
It just disappeared inward. Disappeared.
Disappeared inward. Do you mean it was as if it closed down on itself to blackness?
I guess so. That's the best way you can put it.
It didn't zoom off?
No. No, it didn't.
Try to describe as much detail as you can. What did that navy blue light do over Weslaco?
It just threw sparks. It let off sparks. Little particles or whatever, grayish, but they were really bright. Very slow, though. Like, it didn't fall at a very rapid speed. It kind of floated downwards. And then I looked up at the blue light, and it just ate itself up. As far as what it fell down, it was like 2 in the morning. I was going to go out there and, like, look for them.
Mm-hmm. In your mind, what is the difference between the slow-moving sparks and beams?
I guess beams would be, like, a more bluish kind of color. But these were not as bright. These were really dim, dim little particles, where they weren't as bright as a beam.
Pale, dim particles moving slowly from the navy blue light down onto the town of Weslaco.
Yeah.
And how long do you think these particles, these sparks, kept moving slowly down to the town?
15 seconds.
15 seconds. And then the navy blue light that had emitted these particles down to the town just kind of disappeared by, as you said, eating itself up. It went from a navy blue light inward and became totally black.
Yes. I just stood there in disbelief for about 5 minutes because I didn't know what just happened. And I couldn't explain it. I'd never seen anything like that.
And did you wonder what were those particles doing going down toward Weslaco?
Yeah, I wondered. Pods, maybe? I don't know. I mean, I couldn't explain it. I didn't know what it was.
P-O-D-S, pods?
Yeah, the kind of things you see on TV.
Oh, like invaders with pods.
That was my main focus, but of course it couldn't be that. There has to be a rational explanation for this.
And you and your family in that neighborhood have never seen the light back again after the night of March 3rd.
That's the interesting thing. We didn't see any of those lights anymore. But around the middle of April, just like that night, I come home from school. I had some videos that I wanted to see on my computer, and it's like in the back of my house, I have a window, right? So I go to my computer, it's right next to the window, and I'm looking outside into the back of my house. There's some apartments, and I see a girl tending to her laundry looking upwards. This is around at the same time, 9 p.m. in the middle of April, but she's looking upwards, and I'm very curious to what she's seeing. And then I see her mother, her bigger sister, looking up, like pointing upwards. So I'm like, okay, it's got to be something. So I peek out to the back of my apartment complex,
right,
and I see a very huge object. Two bright lights in each end and a red hue in the middle, creeping softly, like just going really, really slow at a constant speed, right across in the back of our apartment. It's going really, really slow.
And is it low?
It's very low, yes.
Is it near the rooftops?
No, not that low, but it was pretty low. I mean, it was too low for a plane. So I call my brother, and we see it, and it's already getting out of sight. In not even 3 seconds, we just see it zip right across. It was gone. 3 to 4 seconds. Being out of sight in seconds, it couldn't possibly be a plane.
Right. And did you hear any noise?
None whatsoever. It was complete silence.
And how big do you think the size was between each of the white lights?
Oh, it was pretty big. Most of it was just a red glow between it.
Were those white lights pulsing or blinking?
They were blinking.
And what was the color? If you were picking out a red that I in the audience might know, what would be the red color of the glow in between the two white lights?
The red numbers on a clock?
Digital red.
Just like that.
That is a really intense red.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you could see it right across the apartment complex. It was pretty red.
That was the middle of April, and you and I are talking the middle of May, a month later. Have you seen anything unusual in the sky since the middle of April?
That's the weird thing. No, there's been no activity up there, nothing.
Have you heard other people talk about seeing UFO activity in the sky over Weslaco before February 2010?
No, but I have seen before that.
What have you seen before?
Wow, okay. In 2008, in the summer, just exactly the same situation. I'm coming home from work. To the left of me, there's another apartment, right? And they're having a barbecue. They're actually sitting down on the grass. It's around 10:30. I get out of my car. I look upwards. And I see a triangle. A triangle with lights on each end, white lights this time. It's hovering slowly, but very, very, very slow, but no sound. Then I hear all the people getting excited, and they're all looking up.
Was the sky dark with stars?
Yeah, it was a clear night, and all you could see was a triangle, but it was kind of like going in a circle, but slowly.
Oh, you mean it was rotating while it was moving? You could see the entire triangle rotating?
Yes, yes. It's actually a little bit of yellowish on each end of the triangular formation. All I could see was just three lines and maybe a very, very dark in the middle of it. All you could see was just darkness. But the triangle was so dark that you just couldn't see anything. It was just blackness rotating.
Why did you know it was rotating?
You could see the lights on each end. They would rotate. Like, in the shape of a triangle, you could see it was rotating, like, in a full circle. I mean, there's no mistaking about it. And it was moving slowly, no sound. And I was getting really, really excited, calling my mom and my little brother, because they were inside, like, always. But as soon as I call them, and that thing speeds up, and it's out of sight in seconds.
As if it were aware that you were calling?
Yes, I don't know how that is, but I mean, as soon as I bring attention to it, it just leaves. But I don't know why. I mean, it was me and the, like, maybe eight people looking straight up at it. As soon as, like, I make noise or I call people, it just leaves. It bolts out of sight.
Oh, he's never seen anything like that before, Linda.
No, and George, it is always that question. Why are certain geographic areas focused on by this phenomena? Is it under the water? Into the Gulf, off of Brownsville and up to Corpus Christi? Is there something off the water? Is there something underground at that part of what would be the United States coming down and over into Mexico? What is it that is focusing attention there? And to share with you and our coast audience how strange the high strangeness has been in this Weslaco, Brownsville area. I want to go back a little bit further in time to April of 1986. It was about 2 hours before midnight, and now we're going a little bit east of Weslaco toward Brownsville. There were two witnesses driving home. They had just dropped a friend off, and up in the sky, just like what Jose has been saying, they see this first huge, bright, they know it's bigger than a star, but that's what catches their attention. And they stop at an intersection to watch from their car. And as this bright light comes closer, they realize that they're looking at something that is shaped like a saucer. The object hovers right over their car, maybe 20 feet up in the air. Then, from the lower part of this, you have to call it an unidentified flying object, there was a bright light that suddenly it starts emitting multicolored lights. In the Gonzales case, when you look at the photos, you're dealing with navy blue in some and turquoise in others. And then when it spreads out from the vertical column into a triangle of these three, what look like spheres, they're gray. And we know in Stephenville, Texas, that we had so many colors that were being projected in the sky that the photographs look like some kind of beads, like colored beads, mm-hmm. put together. So we're back again, but we're in 1986. All of a sudden, all of these multicolored lights are flashing. And the witnesses sitting in their car told people later that they thought that there was a pattern, like a series, like communication to the lights as these colored lights were going in different directions. And then above this area where the lights were flashing, they saw what looked like glass windows, and the witness could make out figures moving inside. And they described those figures as being human-shaped, except that they had very long and thin arms that they could see through the glass. And it scared them so much that they drove away, and this craft followed them for what they estimated was 5 to 10 minutes, scaring them even more. And then as they approached the city lights, which would have been around the Brownsville area, the object suddenly took off in the opposite direction from which they were traveling. And when they looked back from their car windows, they spotted 3 military helicopters headed right toward this general area where this craft had flown off. And I am appealing to the Coast audience, if there is anyone listening who has had any experience like this in the past or currently, I would love for you to get in touch with me at earthfiles@earthfiles.com. When you look around the country and the world, and you look at the UK has had more UFO reports in the year 2009 since 20 or 30 years ago. When you look at what has been happening over the United States in terms of photography and videotape just since Stephenville in January of 2008, and the fact that a place like Weslaco, that there would be this much activity in just one neighborhood, how much is happening around Weslaco further? If anybody listening has had experiences similar, I would really like to know. I think that Jose's photographs are showing something that is extraordinary, and he is as puzzled as you or I. And then when you go to the issue of the animal mutilations that we just talked about, the fact that they are occurring again in western Montana, I'm really curious if people in the Montana area listening, that maybe somebody has seen some extraordinary aerial object and they've been afraid to talk about it. And I always assure confidentiality. And the one thing that I feel, and everyone that I interview tells me the same thing, when they hear other people on Coast or see Earth Files, it gives them more confidence and more courage to come forward and tell their stories. And that, George, is what I think is one of our greatest values to the world, is being able to share firsthand testimony across all of these strange phenomena so that other people know they're not alone and that there's a lot happening that needs to be reported. And I am standing by at earthfiles@earthfiles.com to receive your report.
Absolutely. And when we come back, Linda has a report on some very strange, mysterious radio emissions. It's an incredible story. And then in our last hour, conversations with Linda, giving you the opportunity to talk with our investigative reporter, Linda Moulton Howe, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, the After Dark magazine is the official magazine of Coast to Coast AM, and it is available for you subscribing by calling 1-888-261-6392. That's 1-888-261-6392, or go online at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back. We've got Linda Moulton Howe with still an incredible story about what is called M82, Mysterious Radio Emissions. Linda.
Well, you know, George, our universe is estimated to be about 13.7 billion light years old. And it's still expanding and growing. And in all that vastness, there are billions of galaxies. And our Earth is in the Milky Way, and about 10 million light years from us are two companion galaxies that astronomers call M81 and M82. So in a way, it's kind of in our neck of the wood, you might say, of the universe. And these two galaxies move rapidly in relationship to each other. M82 is interacting with some of the neutral hydrogen dust surrounding M81. And so they kind of rub shoulders together, and that triggers some violent activity in the central region of M82, which has triggered lots of stars to form in the past just few million years. And that's why M82 is called a starburst galaxy. It makes lots of stars. The new suns are made in all different sizes, from fairly low mass, sort of like our sun, up to these huge suns that are 8 times or more the mass of our sun. And it's an irony that it is these biggest, rarest suns that burn up most rapidly and end their lives in kind of violent, very violent supernova explosions that throw out huge amounts of hot plasma. And those violent eruptions radiate in the radio frequencies before collapsing into neutron stars and occasionally collapsing further into black holes. Well, in that central 82 starburst region, scientists say there are some 50 objects that are recently collapsed remnants of supernovae that have gone off in just maybe a few hundred years. And calculations estimate that a new supernova will occur in the central M82 region about every 20 to 30 years. And that has set in motion the monitoring over the past 2 decades by Tom Muxlow, PhD, a radio astronomer at the Jodrell Bank Center for Astrophysics at the University of Manchester in Manchester, England. He has been monitoring M82, waiting for another supernova to go off. During that time, Professor Muxlow noticed an occasional faint radio wave appear and disappear in M82's central region between his sampling of radio waves every 6 months to a year. And Professor Muxlow said, quote, "We've never known what those faint radio wave objects were. And then as we were reviewing data from the past 20 years, we discovered that there was a very bright new supernova that had gone off in April 2008 that we had originally missed. We realized this in March 2009, over a year later, and we all switched on a very intensive period of monitoring to keep looking at the supernova to see how it was evolving. That's when we were really surprised at what else we found." Close quote. Here now is UK radio astronomer Professor Tom Muxlow.
Okay.
We discovered that at the end of April, in the beginning of May 2009, another object appeared in the central region of M82, and it was another of these faint little points of radio emission, nearly 100 times fainter than the bright new supernova that had gone off elsewhere in the central region. But we thought that's one of these new transient radio sources that come and go within 6 months. So that was quite exciting. We thought, well, maybe this is a faint supernova. That's what we expected it to be, because most of the things that appear in M82 in the radio are indeed supernova remnants that have gone off. So we thought it might be one of those. So we started to monitor this. But it became pretty obvious early on that this was not looking to be like a conventional supernova. For a start, it turned on very rapidly. It appeared from nowhere inside a week. Now, in the radio, we normally expect to detect these objects as they expand and for the radio spectrum to change. They appear usually at higher radio frequencies, shorter wavelengths, and then the spectrum evolves and they become brighter at longer wavelengths. And we expect them to actually evolve and switch on a timescale of days to weeks, reach a peak, and then evolve down and decay away over a timescale of months. Well, this didn't do that. It switched on within a few days, and when it switched on, it was already deep spectrum. That is to say that it's already brighter at longer wavelengths and shorter wavelengths. And in fact, over the first 150 days of monitoring, it showed no sign whatsoever of having any form of decay. So that was unusual. On top of that, we were monitoring its position very accurately with our instrument, the Merlin Array, which is an array of telescopes across England. 230 kilometers in size, which allows us to measure positions with very high precision. And we were able to actually double-check the position of this object by referencing it to the position of all the other supernova remnants in M82 and tied its position very accurately. And over the first 50 days, we noticed that it appeared to move from east to west by about 10 milliarc seconds over that period. And the distance of M82, that's substantial velocity. In fact, it's apparently over four times the speed of light. Now, such apparent supernal motions are seen in the universe. They're not actually moving faster than the speed of light. They're a consequence of special relativity and looking down the throat of jet of plasma pointing merely towards you. And the combination of those two effects produces this bizarre observational effect. And it is not what we would expect to see in a supernova.
For the general audience, just to recap, you are getting data that is showing that there is an object that is emitting this very strong signal, but it also appears to be moving four times the speed of light because of an optical illusion of the angle at which you are looking at this radio source?
Yes. When we look at the jets that come out of the environments of supermassive black holes in the centers of galaxies and of quasars, we quite often see, especially in quasars, we quite often see this apparent supralunar motion. This indicates that this object is probably some jet from an accretion disk around some collapsed object and not a supernova remnant.
As a radio astronomer, you had never seen anything grow at this intensity over a short time period of a week, maintain it for months, and appear to be going four times the speed of light.
That's right. I haven't seen one turn on like this. Very unusual for M82. We've never seen this in M82, and possibly, I would say, we probably haven't seen this type of object before anywhere. This object does appear to be offset from the center of M82. So it's probably not the actual black hole, the center of M82. And it's not likely to be a faint supernova remnant. So what else can it be? Well, we do have jets coming out of systems around collapsed stars within our galaxy, the Milky Way, and we call these microquasars, and they are usually X-ray binary systems where you have two stars close in orbit around each other. One has gone through its history and collapsed to a neutron star or a black hole, and its companion is in close orbit to it and having material pulled off it by the gravitational attraction of the collapsed object, forming an accretion disk, and along the spin axis of the accretion disk come jets. And we know from X-ray studies of M82 that some X-ray variable sources are seen in the nuclear region, which we presume are this type of object. But we've never seen radio waves from any of these before, because normally they would be too far away to detect. If it is a microquasar, then it is certainly more luminous than any galactic example we've seen. Perhaps nearly a factor of 10 brighter than the brightest example that we've seen, which is Cygnus X3, an object in our own Milky Way. Another problem is that it's also long-lived, because these galactic microquasars, they flare up on a timescale of days, and then within a week or two, they've faded away again. And this has been here for, in fact, we just checked it last week, and it's still there. So it's been there for nearly a year, which is quite unlike anything we've seen in the galaxy. And also, M82 has been checked for X-rays, and no one has seen a variable X-ray source at this position either. Mm. So there's a problem. We're scratching our heads over this one. It's not a faint supernova remnant. It's almost certainly not the actual galactic nucleus of M82 or background quasar. It's almost certainly not a foreground object either, because there's not much between us in the Milky Way and M82, and this area has been searched very carefully in other wave bands, and nothing else has been seen. So it's most likely some form of accretion disk system, some form of microquasar, but almost certainly of a type that we haven't actually seen an example of before. So this is probably some form of stellar or intermediate mass black hole system, of some tens of solar masses or something, around which an accretion disk has formed. And we've not seen one of these in detail in the Milky Way before. And this is the chance to study something new. So that's exciting.
What is your theory about what could sustain such intense energy over a year?
That is down to what fueling is taking place. The short-term fueling that we get in the galactic microquasars is caused by the nearby binary star producing a lot of material being dragged off it, falling onto the accretion disk and everything just flaring up. If there's some different form of orbital characteristics to this intermediate mass black hole system, then it could well be that the fueling is more stable and doesn't flare and change on such short timescales. So we're certainly looking at a type of system that we haven't seen before. Now, we recently took a big 20-station observation with radio telescopes right across the world to make a very high angular resolution image of the central part of M82 to study in detail the expanding shells from the other supernova remnants in M82. And we've now got another recent observation made, including this area of this object. And indications are from some of the monitoring observations that have been taking place already. We're actually working on the data at the moment, that this object is already resolved by some observations across the world, showing the size indicating very rapid expansion, perhaps approaching 100,000 kilometers per second, which is very fast, faster than a supernova. So this is looking like a jet. But these observations that we've taken should be able to investigate this at around a million arc second resolution. We'll be working for some months to come, but within 2 or 3 months, we hope we will have this image and be able to see what this object looks like, to see if it is really a jet from some form of accretion disk system, presumably around some sort of intermediate mass black hole, which is what we guess.
Another mystery of high strangeness, Linda.
Well, you know, George, this is unique. Right now, this object, whatever it is, has never been seen before, nothing like it. And that makes it fascinating to research right there. But it goes even further. If the mysterious M82 radio wave is coming from, as he said, an intermediate mass black hole spinning accretion disk in a strong jet, could that black hole in M82 be dragging material from this universe into yet another universe contained in what is called an Einstein-Rosen bridge between the black hole and a white hole? And why am I bringing this up? Well, this very idea was published just recently in Physics Letters B, and from Albert Einstein's general relativity, there has been this concept of a white hole connected to a black hole by a wormhole called an Einstein-Rosen bridge. And if you go to Earth Files, I have this wonderful graphic illustration that has been done by astrophysicists showing this. But in your mind's eye right now, and to listeners, if you can imagine that a black hole is taking in all light, all matter around it at a certain point, and the idea is that the black hole then is ejecting a white hole in another universe of everything that is being sucked out of this universe. Now, keeping that in mind, hypothetically, in this new Physics Letters B proposal or hypothesis, the white hole could be the time reversal of its companion black hole. In this universe where we are, time goes to the future. Entropy is where everything winds down and dies, but time is moving to the future. There could be a universe that time goes to the past, and you could try to throw a vase against a wall, and it would never break. It would always keep assembling. Well, now, an Indiana University physicist suggests that all astrophysical black holes might have Einstein-Rosen bridges, and each might contain a new universe inside that form simultaneously with the black hole.
Isn't that incredible?
This really is. And, quote, from that it follows that our universe could have itself formed from inside a black hole existing inside of another universe, close quote. And then all of a sudden, what pops into my mind are pictures of those Russian dolls. And you have a little doll inside of another doll. Each doll is
on and on and on.
The same, right? Well, could universes be stacked inside of black holes and each other like Russian nesting dolls, in which you've got these different sizes? And when you start getting into this discussion, even though it's hypothetical, would this whole area of black holes, white holes, other universes inside of what's happening between black holes and white holes have something to do with the mysterious dark matter and dark energy that baffles astrophysicists who are now trying in the Large Hadron, collider in Geneva, they are trying to see if they can crack dark matter and that whole issue that we're in a universe in which only about 4% we can see and measure as matter. About 96%+ of the universe falls into this dark energy, dark matter. And then you get to the even bigger box of questions, and in an upcoming Coast, I'm going to try to deal with this. Why is it that we are in a matter universe at all? Why at the singularity? Why at the Big Bang? Did it even have any percentage that went to positive matter, the universe that we look at? Why wasn't it an equal balance of antimatter and matter that would have been self-annihilating? Well, there right now, there is new information that is being proposed, and the Large Hadron Collider is going to try to be looking for this too. They may have found one of the reasons for why we exist, why we are in a matter universe that was not annihilated. It is some of the most fascinating work. And in an upcoming Coast, I'm going to talk about that too, because I think this whole question of why are matter worlds there is one of the most fascinating things about our entire cosmos.
Are we getting close to touching the hands of God, Linda?
You know, as you say that, Joe Licken, I've talked with him at Fermi Lab about some of the work he's doing at the LHC, and he said about this new work concerning why we are in a matter universe at all, he said, quote, "I would not say that this announcement is the equivalent of seeing the face of God, but it might turn out to be the toe of God."
How about that? Linda, stay with us. Next up, Conversations with Linda. Questions for Linda on many of the stories that she has covered or stories that you've heard recently here on Coast to Coast AM. And perhaps those of you who are whistleblowers out there, if you want to tip Linda off to a story, you can make the call as well. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment with Linda Moulton Howe and your questions and calls on Coast to Coast AM.